Is this good?
Oh man, I love this place. I love being here. Thank you for the wonderful introduction, Chris. It's been a very long time since I've spoken at a meeting, so y'all are going to have to bear with me, but I'm sure y'all all know I can talk, so we'll get at it. I don't like this thing. All right, well, let's see here. So first of all, my name is Wade. I am an alcoholic. I'm an addict. I am most importantly a person in recovery, and that's how I define myself today. I think it is very important that we acknowledge where we are, not where we were. And my sobriety date is December 7th, 2019, or 2011. That was not a Freudian slip, I promise. So, what was it like? What happened? What is it like now? My story is very similar to lots of other stories that you hear. There was nothing special or phenomenal that happened in my life that led to me becoming an alcoholic. I was born and raised here in Austin. Upper middle class family. Everything I wanted, everything I needed. Nothing big in my life that happened that said, wow, this kid is going to go down some path that isn't super kosher. But, you know how it goes. I started, I like to talk about feelings more than I like to talk about what happened, right? Like, we all know that I like to talk about feelings, right? When I was a kid, I always remember having this thought, like, all the way back to, I probably remember back in first grade when my grandmother would pick me up from school and she'd drive me home, and I remember the drive homes, and I always remember thinking, the way I think can't be the same as other people. Like, this can't be normal. I'm not normal. I don't think normal. There's got to be something wrong with me. And I had nothing externally telling me that. I had friends. I had family. People seemed to like me, but I did not like myself, I guess. And I do not know why. I talk to the people I work with very often about when that question of why comes up. Comes up a lot, right? We want to know why we went down the path we did. We want to know why we became addicts or alcoholics. And the simple answer is, like, I have no idea why I felt so different than everybody else. Once again, nothing in my life should have made me feel that way. But I did. I felt so different. And yet, when I started using and drinking and doing all those things that we do middle school, high school years, I don't remember having that feeling of like, man, I've arrived. Man, this is it. This is the best thing ever. But I distinctly remember sometime around the time I got to high school and I had been drinking and smoking pot for a couple years, I remember that I no longer felt the way I used to feel. I remember having friends struggling with like depression, anxiety, things like that in high school, going off the deep end, as we may say, before we knew better. And I remember having very little empathy for that. I remember not understanding what the hell was so hard about life. Yet when I think back now in my sobriety and all the exploration I've done of myself, I don't understand how I felt that way. And the only explanation I've found is that I had found my solution, right? I grew up, hated myself, hated the way I felt, hated the way I thought, and then all of a sudden I'm using and drinking every day and I no longer have that feeling. So the only explanation is that alcohol and drugs were my solution. That's it. High school was great. I loved high school. I drank and I smoked and I sold drugs and I did whatever the hell I wanted, and I had no repercussions. And then I guess one day I had repercussions, right? That's kind of the story. That's our story, right? Is someday it stops working. And once again, I don't have a clear-cut time in my life when I remember it not working. But I do remember going... I was a chameleon, right? I was someone that thought I could... I thought I could conquer the world, but I thought I was a piece of shit. And so therefore, I tried to put myself in as many different situations and places with as many different people as I thought I could. And when I went to college, I did that, right? I went to college, I was going to become an engineer, right? Make a lot of money, had this very prestigious degree, and I was also going to join a fraternity, and I was also going to maintain my counterculture, stoner lifestyle that I just, like, identified with. That was every piece of me was like, I'm going to smoke weed till the day I die. Right? Yeah. None of y'all have been there, right? No. Totally don't relate. I know. And so I took on that. I took on those three different identities. This is one of those big things that I define my addiction around, like my the time of my life when I was really, really deep in my addiction. When I think back and I think about what it was like to be in addiction, that year, freshman year of college, was the year I think about the most, because I was full force, run amok, do whatever the hell I want addiction, right? And I was trying to live every identity I could and maintain face everywhere I could, and this was when it started to crumble, right? I could not maintain that anymore. This is also when I say I had my mental breakdown. And I quite literally mean that. I feel like I had a mental breakdown at some point during my freshman year of college. I found myself locked in my dorm room for 2 months in a row with crippling anxiety and fear about the world around me. And it's great now. Like, I have all these words to describe all these feelings that I had. And it sounds like I had all this insight into, like, who I was and what I was doing. But I had no idea what was wrong with me. I just know that it was terrifying. I mean, terrifying to step foot outside my dorm room. I remember walking out. I was in Lubbock, right? I was at Tech, and Lubbock. It's not a great place for if you're struggling with depression. It's not the most uplifting place, but God, I remember walking outside and, like, it would be bright and sunny and gorgeous out, and everything about it would terrify me. It was too bright. It was too sunny. It was too hot. There were too many people. And I hid, and I hid, and I hid, and I hid, and I hid. And I had stopped using, actually, for, like, a couple months. And I guess it's important to, like, qualify a little bit, right? We're supposed to do that. We're supposed to qualify. Like, what did I do, right? I talked about smoking weed, and I talked about drinking. At some point, 16, 17, I started taking a lot of pills. Opiates became kind of part of my life throughout. I don't remember any time after the age of 16 where opiates weren't, like, somewhere in the mix. I don't remember, like, feeling like I was an addict until much later, but... opiates were always there. But anyways, like, back to that time in that dorm room where I'm just hiding. I had stopped using. I had stopped doing anything because I was too afraid to leave my room. And I actually, like, got a little help for myself, and I started to feel a little better. And I think this is kind of a really important recovery kind of lesson. And I'm sorry, I don't want to be up here and be preachy. Like, it's kind of part of my job, and I'm going to try to, like, differentiate that. I'm a counselor, and everything is supposed to be a lesson, but I'm going to do my best not to do that. but I started to get better, and I very quickly forgot what brought me there. It turns out what brought me there was the identities crumbled. I got kicked out of my fraternity because I couldn't hang enough with them because I was too busy like hanging with my stoner friends. And I had to withdraw from two semesters, so I got put on academic probation at school. And all of a sudden, my stoner friends didn't want to hang out with me anymore because I was not fun anymore, right? I was just this kid that sat in his room and was scared to come out. So every piece of me crumbled, and I'm not surprised why I ended up in that place that I was in. But very quickly, I forgot. I forgot how miserable it was, and I started... I kind of started like forcing myself to smoke weed again. Like, it made me uncomfortable and anxious, but I was like, I'm going to do it. I love it so much. I'm just going to smoke weed because it's what I love, but I hate it. And it eventually like got better, and I kind of fell out of it, and lo and behold, I had my solution back. Once again, I didn't realize that at the time, but I started to feel better because I started to cover everything back up with the smoking weed and drinking and taking pills and doing all those things that I did. So I somehow meandered my way back to Austin. I ran back to Austin, right? I had parents and I streamlined back to Austin the second they would kind of let me admit defeat. I don't know about y'all, but I have parents that are... we don't quit. We don't give up. We don't say that we can't do something. So it took me a long time to kind of get up the courage and say I wasn't going to stay in Lubbock and I was going to come home and do that thing. So came home to Austin. I'm 20 years old. I have this new dog that I decided on a whim to get. And I started waiting tables, and I started trying to go to ACC, and once again, this is where I just started floating. I wasn't miserable, per se, anymore, but I certainly wasn't happy. I mean, everything was hard. Everything was, and when I say, like, hard, like, not like the way, like, life, everyday life is hard. Like, right, life can be hard, and that's part of the deal, but just waking up was hard, and hanging out with friends was hard, and making time with family was hard, because I was hiding, I was continuing to, like, not be who I am. At some point, when I was 21, 22, something like that, I shattered my ankle. I was drunk, I was downtown, I was giving a piggyback ride, and I know, my stories are, like, not glamorous and exciting, like, that's not me. I find the silliest, stupidest, lamest ways to hurt myself or get in trouble. So I was giving a piggyback ride and to some girl, you know, I thought she was cute and gave him, your feet hurt. Oh, yeah, let me give you a piggyback ride. I shattered my ankle. yeah, I know. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It was awesome. And so this is when, like, it went from, like, I just took Vicodin or pain pills or whatever it was, like, here and there. I don't remember any time after my surgery that I was not just every single day eating pills. And the progression happened, like the same progression that happens to anybody that's an opiate addict. You know, you take pills, and then you take oxys, and then you do heroin, and like that's what happened, right? Once again, it's not a unique story. I will say it happened fairly quickly, and I got really miserable really fast. Once again, I ended up back in this kind of hole that I was in. And I told this story. I did this interview for Spectrum News the other day for Austin Recovery, and I told this piece of my story, and it was I knew we talked for like an hour and she used 2 minutes and I was like, this is what's going to come out. But I knew she was going to use this one piece. It's like super dramatic and it's probably like the most dramatic part of my story. But I was living in an apartment and I was doing oxys every day, and it was that time when oxys started to kind of like go away, back in 2000, I don't know, 9, 10, when all of a sudden they just weren't there anymore. And I didn't know that, like, the withdrawals and the misery of, like, not having it, like, I didn't correlate any of that. I just knew, like, I got really, really depressed really quickly. And I just remember waking up from a blackout with, I had, like, taken some Xanax and drank something, and I woke up from a blackout, and I was in my shower with a razor blade in my hand, and I without a doubt knew exactly like what my intention had been. And so that was the moment where I was like, well, shit, like this is okay. It's time to figure something out. It's kind of time to do something. And so I asked for help, right? I asked for help. I came to Austin Recovery. It looked just like this. Troll Hall has not changed. That is, if there's one thing I remember from Austin Recovery, I don't remember a ton of my time here, but if there's one thing that I remember is Troll Hall and like the smell and the, like, everything about it. Like, I remember the first day I came back to work here and it was just like hit me in the face, like, oh, I'm back. It's not like a bad thing, like, you know, it's just like, it's just got its own personality. And so I came to Austin Recovery, and I did not want to be here, man. I had no desire to be here. Once I got here, I was telling someone the other day, you know, a lot of our, and any of you that are alumni and have been here kind of know, like, the bunch of the, we're a nonprofit agency, we do a lot of different funding, we have a lot of people on scholarships and things like that. And to get in here on some level of scholarship, it requires a lot of dedication. Like, you have to call every day or like every 2 or 3 days for like 2 months. The wait list is 2 to 3 months on average for people to get in here on scholarship. And I was telling someone the other day, like, I am blown away by any of you that did that. Because the second anytime I ever asked for help in recovery or in my addiction, I instantly regretted it. Like, I instantly, like, hey, mom and dad, like, I'm so sick, I need help, please come get me. And I get in their car and I go, fuck, 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 where is the dope? Help me, someone go get me dope. And that was that. So, for real, like, kudos to any of you that can do that, can, like, be desperate enough to ask for help multiple days in a row, multiple weeks in a row, like, it takes a really strong person, and I mean, that's who we are. We are strong people to survive the way that we survive and to make it through life the way we make it through life. We are the strongest people I know. So I came to Austin Recovery. I didn't want to be here. I made every excuse in the book to not be here. But, you know, I didn't have a place to go if I didn't be here, so I stayed, and I learned about all the shit I hadn't done yet. That's really what I got out of Austin Recovery the first time when I was here. I looked around, and I saw a bunch of people that looked like me that, and this was before meth was, like, a big thing. Like, everybody, but heroin used to be the cool thing. used to be. And I looked around and I saw a bunch of people like that used needles, and I was like, oh, like, young, rich, white kids shoot dope? Like, I had no idea. Like, and honestly, that's like the one thing I took out of this place when I left, because I was still sick. I was not looking for solution. So I went out there and I, like, scraped together, I don't know, 65 days clean and or dry or whatever the hell you wanted to call it. I was going to meetings, but, like, I had told myself, I just didn't want to do, I didn't want to do pills anymore, right? I didn't want to do opiates anymore. I didn't want to do heroin anymore. And like, I was like, oh, drinking's like, it's whatever, but like, I guess I could use a break. So I said, I'll wait one year and see how it goes. And that doesn't work. We cannot set a calendar on our recovery. And it's not that I wasn't saying that I was going to do it my whole life. It's the fact that I was saying I'm going to wait 1 year. It's the fact I was putting it that far out was the problem. I mean, that is a daunting task. And I, from that experience, I learned that I have to like be like, just today. Because anytime those thoughts come up about drinking and using, because they still come up. I have, 8.5 years sober. I still think about drinking and using. It would be insane for someone to say, in the society that we live in, surrounded by legalized marijuana and Super Bowl ads and family that drinks and billboards on the side of the road, it would be a bold-faced lie for me to sit up here and say, I never think about drinking. That is a fairly regular part of my life. Now, the difference is I don't obsess about drinking today. The thought can come and go, and I can leave it. And it's because I've decided that I'm not going to drink today. I don't know what's going to happen in a year. I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months. I like to think that I'm still going to be clean and sober, but it is certainly not set in stone. What I know is when I go to bed tonight, and so I tell my guys all the time, when it's scary and we're afraid and we don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, and it feels so daunting to say we're never going to drink or use again, I always ask my guys this question. You think you're going to be sober when you go to bed tonight? And the resounding answer is always, yeah, no question. I'm not going to get high for the rest of the day. Sure, that's easy. I'm like, that's it. That's how simple this thing is, man. Like, this is not some, I don't know, I'm not good at words sometimes, but this thing really is that simple. It's not always easy, but it is simple. We just don't drink or use today. And I learned that from this idea of like setting a year in my head that I wasn't going to drink. What did happen instead was the second, and I find this to be an important part of my story for those that aren't sure or that have some reservations. What I say probably won't change your mind otherwise, but maybe it will for one person, so I try. The second I started, so I started drinking first. So I went and got a six pack one day. I was like, fuck it, this is stupid. I like, why am I waiting? I'm just gonna do it. And so I went and got a six pack and I drank 2 beers. I was like, oh, see, it's fine, I'm fine. The next day, I was back at my buddy's house, who I was now allowed to hang out with again because I wasn't in recovery anymore, so that means I can hang out with my using friends again. So all the rules are out the window, and I had a bottle of wine. And 3/4 of the way through the bottle of wine, I like grabbed the bong out of his hand, and I was smoking again. Despite him really trying to be supportive and be like, bro, like, no, you're not, you know, like, I thought you said you didn't want to do that. And no, I'd taken the wheel back, right? Like, I took control over my life again, and it's where it gets me. So kind of like the short version, the thing I always tell people is within 30 days, I think, of picking up a beer again, and I was not, you know, a super deep bottom addict or alcoholic, like, but within 30 days again, I had totaled another car, which I haven't talked about in my story, but there are plenty of those in my story. I was back, like, on the wrong side of town at 2:00 in the morning with money in my sock, walking around trying to do the wrong thing. And I had found a needle, you know? It picks up where it left off, and we hear that all the time, and like we are all different and we're all different people, but my story speaks to that thing that I hear all the time from other alcoholics and addicts, is we can stop, but the second we pick back up again, we go straight back to where we were. And that's what happened to me. So anyways, a year went by, I got sober, because I want to talk about recovery. I spend too much time qualifying. I want to talk about recovery, but a year went by, I got sober, I went to treatment again, and I got sober, and I stayed sober. So on December 1st, I checked into detox. My sobriety date is December 7th. Y'all can figure out what happened between then and there, but so my sobriety date is December 7th, 2011, and the number one thing that I did to get sober was I stopped making my own decisions. So I went to detox, and that was the only plan. I was just going to go to detox. I just need to dry out. I was tired of doing it at home, you know, under lock and key, because I did that a bunch in my recovery, in my addiction. I would call my folks and be like, oh, I'm sick, can I come over and, you know, dry out and blah, blah, blah. And I was so sick and tired of cold turkey detox. I was like, I just want to go to detox. It sounds amazing. I've never been. People say it's great. So I went to detox, and then by the time I was out of detox, the people around me had decided that the best thing for me to do was go to treatment. And so I said, okay, I'll go. Fine. And then I went to 46 days inpatient treatment. And by the time I was ready to go, the people around me in my life, this being counselors, parents, friends in treatment, the people I had begun to trust, the community, the AA community in Kerrville where I was in treatment, they said, dude, you don't need to go home. You don't need to go back to Austin. There's nothing for you in Austin. So I moved to Connecticut. I moved to Connecticut. Yeah, I mean, I know. Yeah. there was a reason I moved to Connecticut. There was a long-term kind of extended care treatment center up there. Basically, a super overly structured sober house that was a year long. With a phase down progression of accountability. And I just went. I said, fine. I didn't know where. I swear to God, I had no idea where Connecticut was. I thought Connecticut was somewhere in the middle. No, I thought it was like near Tennessee or something. I thought I was going to like the plains or something. And that's really what I pictured. I was like, oh, cool, you know, like Midwest, whatever. But I moved to Connecticut, and I did recovery, man. I jumped in with some awesome people, and I started going to meetings, and I found people I loved, and I started listening to what they told me to do. I wanted to, being the guy that had, you know, wanted to go to school and be an engineer, and raised by this kind of middle-upper-class family of successful people, I wanted to go have that, and I wanted now, right? I had wasted too many years of my life, and when I look back, I like wasted maybe like 3 or 4 years in addiction, which is nothing in the scale of things. But I wanted to just like go get it all right now, and people told me to slow down. Slow down. So I took 2 classes, and I worked part-time, and I did what I needed to do to get by. I didn't get anything extra. You know, like I didn't have a car for 8 months while I was there, which was like, for me, the most humbling experience in the world. I've never not had a car. I've never had to take the bus. And I did those things. And by the time I had got out of that place, like I had become a house manager and I had held a job for 8 months. A part-time job for 8 months. I had never done that. I had never held a job longer than a couple months. I'd held jobs long enough for people to realize who I was, and then I would run. Never got fired. I never let them fire me. I would just stop going. Never, ever, ever let them catch on that much. But I had held a job for 8 months, and I had passed two classes, and all of a sudden I had a little bit of self-esteem back. So that's another one of those, you know, this teaching moment, right? Sorry, it's what I do. Esteemable acts build self-esteem. If you want to know what builds self-esteem, if you're someone like me that was out there and felt like you were the biggest piece of shit in the world, do things that make you feel good and that make you feel accomplished. Esteemable acts build self-esteem. That's it. That's all it took. So it's like these little things, like these little tiny things in recovery, when you stack them up, it equals a big cool life, right? That's it. So I'd done that. I'd gotten sober, and then I went and got an apartment with a sober friend, and I did this thing. And this is why I said I wanted to talk about recovery, because my 8.5 years in recovery, I have learned far more than I ever learned in addiction about life, about what to do, especially about what not to do. But I've learned how to get through it. So I very quickly made some very kind of rookie mistakes, if you will. This chick that I had a thing with in rehab, she moved to Connecticut with me. I hadn't seen her in 10 months. We knew each other for 40 days in rehab. Thought, this is a great plan. Come move to Connecticut with me. I finally got my place. We're ready. we're going to do this life. And that didn't work out. And it was really, really hard. I felt trapped in this relationship for 6 months because we both felt trapped. She had moved to Connecticut and had nowhere to go and no family. And neither of us wanted to talk about it. And so we were just miserable together until she found somebody else to go be miserable with without telling me. And that was really hard, man. Like, that was devastating. I had, you know, 18 months sober, and this girl who I had the most intense infatuation with, right? Like, the rehab lust is like the strongest thing in the world. It is, right? Like, I mean, we get clean and we get sober and our senses open back up, and everything feels so full and rich and powerful, and all of a sudden, like, this had crumbled around me. And it was the first time I really remember, like, the idea of drinking or using came up, and not because, like, I wanted to, but because it was like everything told me, like, that's what you do. Your girl cheats on you, you go get loaded, right? Like, and I didn't. Right? And that's it. I don't have some miracle answer as to why, but I just didn't. I chose not to. I called people, right? Like, I called my sponsor. I called my parents. I called the people I cared about, and I got through it, and I was fine. Had I used, I would not be fine. That's my lesson in sobriety, is no matter how hard things are, how much we screw up, the only thing we can really do worse after screwing up is using. It's going to compound everything. So I lived in Connecticut. I got better. I grew and I learned and I made mistakes and life was hard. I finally got into school full time. I met my wife in school. She's here tonight. It's awesome. Yes. So I met my wife, and I graduated school and I got a social work degree, and I went and then got another master's in social work, and I got engaged, and Connecticut felt complete at that point, right? And so 6 years. I'm not saying that's like the magic number for everybody. But if you're going to change people, places, and things, I needed to do it for an extended period of time. So 6 years was my number. And so far it has worked. So I moved back to Austin after about 6 years. I did not want to be an addictions counselor. I had gotten a fancy master's degree, and my ego was flying off the hinges, and I wanted to be like a therapist and clinical and straight faced and I know, yeah, the people that know me. And I started applying for jobs, and lo and behold, Austin Recovery had this position open that said dual diagnosis counselor. So like it spoke to my ego, like it was different enough and clinical enough, right? Like clinical is the word we use for like mental health and diagnosing and things like that. And so I was like, okay. And I did it. And once again, like God took me where like I didn't. If I had gotten in the way of myself again, I can't imagine where I'd be. It makes me so, it gives me so much anxiety and pain to think about, like, had not taken this job, had not moved back to Texas at that time. Had I not just kind of let life take me to where it wanted to take me, I wouldn't have the life I have today. And, you know, that's, here I am, right? I've been here 2.5 years. I've got 8.5 years sober. My life is fuller than I could have ever imagined. And so I pulled up before I came up here, I pulled up the 9-step promises because I don't go to enough meetings and I don't hear these words enough. And so like, I don't have them memorized. So but I wanted to talk about them. I wanted to talk about the 9-step promises because they're not bullshit. And I don't think I'm just lucky to have them. I think it's how we look at them, right? So I wanted to look at them and kind of talk about how they fit into my life and how I allow them to fit into my life. So we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. That's a huge thing in my recovery, is I am grateful for my addiction. I am grateful that I had the experiences that I had. And it is so hard to stand up here in a room full of a lot of people that are in earlier sobriety and say these things and not have this sense that you're going to look at me and just kind of call bullshit, and that's okay. I get it. I mean, that's how I was. Like, I looked at these people, and I was like, whatever, dude. Like, you don't understand. But at some point, someone told me to be grateful for my addiction, because without my addiction, I would not have moved to Connecticut. Without my addiction, and like, the longer I go in sobriety, the more things I have to be grateful for because of my addiction, right? Because every choice we make leads us somewhere. So without the bad choices, I wouldn't be standing here today doing what I'm doing. What else does it say? We will know the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. The feelings of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. So y'all heard a lot of my story was surrounded by this feeling of being not worth it, right? There's lots of different words I could use, and I've been cursing a lot, so I'm going to try not to anymore, but I do not have that feeling anymore. I wake up, and I feel full. I feel worthwhile. I don't think that I'm, like, better. Like, I don't think I'm more worthwhile than anybody. But I feel like my life means something. I'm worth something today. And it wavers how much each day, but I don't feel empty and hollow in the way I did before. We lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. It's a really hard one. I think a lot of people look at that one and say, there's no way I'm always going to be a selfish person. And in some regards, we maintain selfishness, right? I mean, we I'll stick to that. I do what I need to do to make sure that I get what I need out of life. But I think the difference is I've learned the difference between need and want. I've learned not to do things when they hurt other people, no matter how much I think I need or want something. So it's not that I'm no longer selfish, because I think about myself quite often. And I think most people do, and that's okay. But I no longer put myself in front of others. And I think that's what this thing is talking about here. Our whole outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us, without a doubt. No question. Fulfilled in my life every day. I do not live in fear. I worry about what other people think. I do not obsess about what other people think. That is the difference. All of these things, yes, they are not. Our life doesn't just magically become some worry-free bliss. We just don't have to live in misery anymore. We don't have to obsess about the misery anymore. That's what the promises say. The promises say we can just be normal people with normal concerns. All we have to do is not drink and not use, and that's it. And then we can have a normal, full life again. The gnats are back, man. I got to end. Y'all know my gnat battle. Anybody that's been here in the last couple weeks knows my battle with gnats. So I swallowed a gnat the other day teaching a class. For anybody that doesn't know my gnat battle, it was fun. So are these extravagant promises? I think very much not. I think they're very true, and they just take a little work. And every day, just taking advice and letting someone else take the wheel. And whoever that is changes for me. Sometimes it's God. Sometimes it's other people. Sometimes, as long as it's not me, man, that's all that matters. But I've taken enough of your time. I am so grateful to be here. I am grateful to be in recovery, and I appreciate y'all allowing me to share.